Welcome back to another episode of One World Living. I'm Bridie.
I'm Rona.
And I'm Harvey.
Your host as always.
In this podcast, we delve into everything climate action and environmental responsibility as we continue our mission for
One World Living.
Before we start the episode, I have to ask, Harvey, is that another new jacket I see? We're meant to be the example here, come on.
But it's leopard print, guys. I couldn't not.
Yeah, right.
Well, just like Harvey, we're all guilty of buying things we really don't need. And with us constantly satisfying our unnecessary needs, we've come to live in a society which admires a more is better attitude.
That's what we call the dominant social paradigm.
Go on, Brani. Why don't you explain that for our listeners?
It's this idea that as a society, we have collective beliefs and a worldwide view. This currently includes the idea that economic growth and wealth are strongly correlated with quality of life. We live in a society with a preset mindset, which encourages us to keep consuming. We only live once, after all.
But so does our planet. In 2019, 62 million metric tons of clothing were consumed worldwide. Overconsumption of our resources and the consequential waste means that we require 2 to 3 planets worth of resources to sustain our habits. And so, today's question now becomes more apparent than ever. Who has greater power to positively impact on climate change by tackling overconsumption? Marketers or consumers?
So I guess we should start with, why are consumers overconsuming?
We've already established this idea of a preset mindset. Thanks to the DSP, we're programmed to consume. But okay, Harvey, tell us why you've bought yet another jacket, and don't tell us it's because you needed it.
Well, I saw someone on Instagram wearing it, and I found a good deal, but I just needed to get it.
So what you've just described here is a need, yeah?
Yeah.
What you've actually described here is, in fact, not a need, but an irrational want. This want is created by a market that dictates overconsumption and feeds on vices of greed. And just like you, more and more consumers are being encouraged by the market to be psychologically dissatisfied with what they have. We always feel we need more, when in reality we have everything we need. Some might even self-diagnose it as a shopping addiction, Harvey.
But it's not your fault. There are so many factors in place which encourage you to spend on irrational things.
I'm going to point out that you've just used the phrase, it's not your fault, here, Rona, implying that marketers are the problem with overconsumption. Is this the case you're arguing?
Yes, they are the problem. It's only because of marketers that consumers feel a need to buy so many products in the first place. For marketers triggering the release of dopamine, hitching themselves to the latest feel-good trend, using celebrities to endorse their products, triggering nostalgia, peddling panic and paranoia, it's just becoming, frankly, impossible to resist all the temptations that marketers throw at us.
And don't get me started on how they track every click we make online. Marketing is just becoming more and more personalised to the use of data collection and organisation. Marketers are using this myriad of data to prey on people's insecurities and encourage them to buy something new.
Take, for example, companies who are on the latest fast fashion wave, like Zara, who adopt personalised marketing strategies by using email and social media to send consumers specialised offers and alert them of suggested products based on their preferences. This has created a large consumer demand for their products. And to meet this demand, Zara is producing large quantities of garments, which are made from cheap and environmentally harmful materials.
In fact, the brand releases an incredible 24 collections a year, 500 designs a week, and nearly 20,000 per year.
Wow.
That is crazy. The company's profit margins are huge, but this profit comes at the cost of collateral damage to the environment.
So with consumers constantly seeking the newest Zara top, dress, trousers, jackets, what happens to the top dress or trousers they don't use anymore?
Well, most people throw them out and they end up in landfill. Garments that end up here can take over 200 years to decompose. And during decomposition, these textiles generate methane and leach toxic chemicals and dyes into the groundwater and to our soil.
With fast fashion encouraging unsustainable consumption patterns and adding to the ongoing climate crisis, is there a way marketers can offer a solution or have a positive impact on climate change?
Unfortunately, marketers cannot reverse all of the current environmental damage caused through clothing wastage, but they do hold the power to prevent and reverse further damage. Consumers are no longer looking for products purely based on their functionality and emotional appeal. They are now considering a third dimension, the company's social responsibility. The solution lies in shifting marketing practices. And by this, I mean shifting companies away from commercial marketing practices, where businesses exploit consumer culture to gain a profit, and move towards sustainability marketing practices. Kemper and Balanzan have presented 3 conceptualizations of sustainability marketing practices: auxiliary, reformative, and transformative, which promote this transition to a sustainable society. To help explain how these practices can tackle our overconsumption problem, I will adopt the use of a brand that is avid about protecting our environment, and that is Patagonia. The first concept is auxiliary sustainability marketing. This is focused on the environmental, social, and economic dimensions of production and consumption. By considering the socio-ecological product life cycle and promoting the transparency of business, consumers are more willing to pay price premiums for greener products. Creating transparency proved a big success for Patagonia in 2011 through the infamous Don't Buy This Jacket campaign. The advertisement described the environmental cost of one of the brand's best-selling fleece jackets and encouraged consumers to reconsider and instead opt for a used Patagonia product, ultimately with the aim of promoting smarter consumption. The second concept is reformative sustainability marketing. This form of marketing extends on the aspirations of ASM that consumption levels are currently unsustainable and makes a focus on real needs rather than frivolous ones. Patagonia made a plea for thoughtful consumption in their 2024 campaign titled Unfashionable.
Oh, I remember a quote from that campaign. Look, I've got it here. Fashion is none of our business. We make gear that is multifunctional, repairable and timeless, because the longer it stays in play, the better it is for the earth.
Their attack on fast fashion brands is attempting to pull customers away from brands like Zara that are damaging our environment, and in doing so forces consumers to think more consciously about what they are consuming. And that follows on to the final concept, which is transformative sustainability marketing, which extends the first two approaches and embraces the need to transform current institutions and norms. This concept goes beyond reducing the harms of current consumption and exploitative production processes, and goes one step further by introducing and encouraging positive lifestyles and behaviours.
Take Patagonia's 2020 Buy Less, Demand More campaign, for example. The campaign encourages consumers to demand better practices from companies with exploitative production processes. Patagonia believes that educated consumers will force companies like Zara to drop their harmful practices. They quote, "What you buy is what the industry will become."
So how does shifting to these practices tackle our overconsumption problem?
Well, through decoding the gaze of Patagonia, it is clear that by shifting marketing practices to those which educate and encourage sustainable consumption, marketers hold a constructive influence over consumer behaviour. Thus, marketers hold the power to shift consumption patterns and reduce the industry's impact on the climate crisis. But ultimately, one company cannot make this change on its own.
I totally see where you're coming from, but what I've recognised here is that ultimately consumer culture forms the core of the DSP, and because of this, I believe consumers hold the greater power to create environmental change, and I'll tell you why. Consumers hold the power to challenge the ethos and actions of businesses, our lovely marketers, by holding firm their values and acting accordingly. If done effectively, they hold the ultimate bargaining power to shape our society into a less predatory space, alter the DSP to a more green position, and therefore positively impact on climate change. In theory, it really does seem so simple. However, altering an entire society's mindset and actions from the existing DSP, as you probably guessed, isn't an easy task.
But many consumers already consider the environment, with almost 9 out of 10 UK consumers saying that they experience the disruptive impacts of climate change in their lives, and many now shop more considerately.
Yes, but however, I'm sure our listeners will agree that as regular media digesters ourselves, we're not naive to the secrets hidden in how data is presented to us. For example, a 2023 McKinsey survey showed that 78% of US consumers say that sustainable lifestyle is important to them. The use of the words important to them here suggests awareness and intent. However, the stats from the same survey linked to converting these intentions into actions are hardly convincing. The gap identified here is what we'd call the attitude intentions behaviours gap, in which consumers' ecological values and attitudes often fail to materialise in actual purchases of sustainable products.
Harvey, you're a great example of that. You cycle into the studio every day with your reusable coffee cup. We literally run a sustainability podcast. No one knows better than you. Yet, you still bought another new jacket that you really didn't need.
Oh, whatever you say, Rona. But I guess good intentions can't make a positive impact unless they become actions. So the challenge here is, how do we get consumers like me to act in accordance with their values?
I'm going to touch on a framework very quickly here called the Behavioural Reasoning Theory. Put simply, this theory helps us understand that values are only the first step in developing attitudes, which then inform our intentions and behaviours by highlighting that people create reasons to justify their choices, both for and against a behaviour. For example, the physical cost of a product can demotivate consumers from making a sustainable choice, as they are often pitched at a higher price point than a reason against adopting the behaviour. Going back to McKinsey, 60% of US consumers say that they were willing to pay more for more sustainable products. And I think this really clearly reflects the gap that we have here, because 78% said that a sustainable lifestyle was important to them, only 60% said that they'd be willing to pay more for a sustainable product, and if we apply the framework, it's safe to assume that there will be another existing gap between those willing to and those who do actually pay more for sustainable products.
And even when someone supports sustainability, there are always strong negative reasons like high cost or inconvenience, and these can prevent action. This is particularly prevalent in the case of the fashion industry, where sustainable options are more expensive than the mass produced.
Everyone has their own personal threshold for how sustainable they're willing or able to be in their daily life before the effort or sacrifices start to feel overwhelming. A lifestyle sacrifice threshold. Research shows that we all have conflicting values when accounting both our altruistic values, which consider others, and our biospheric values, which consider the environment. But also, of course, our egotistic values, which determine the real benefit appeal to ourselves as customers. This conflict results in trade-offs, often at the expense of the environment.
I will admit that marketers therefore play a significant role in making sustainable options more accessible, for example, with effective use of pricing strategies. But the social learning theory offers a promising way to bridge this gap by emphasising the role of social influence in peer behaviour. It's the idea that when individuals see sustainable choices modelled and positively reinforced by their peers, they are more likely to adopt similar behaviours. This collective influence suggests that everyone, in essence, becomes a marketer of sustainable choices, fostering a culture where responsible consumption is the norm. By addressing perceived barriers, aligning sustainability with personal values, and leveraging social influence, marketers and individuals alike can transform pro-environmental attitudes into concrete, impactful actions, a gateway to tackling overconsumption.
So basically, what you're saying is, if we can reduce this gap, there will be a great positive influence on climate change?
For sure. We can speak about bridging this gap as a future actor in the role of combating climate change, but whilst we wait for consumers to convert and marketers to adapt, the consumers can make a positive impact imminently and already have. We've already touched on the idea of social learning theory, but what this really means too is that consumers can act as their very own touchpoint online, offering authenticity, visibility and advocacy through organic user-generated content to hold a great power of influence.
I like this particular quote from Philip Kotler. Companies are increasingly swimming in a highly transparent fishbowl. This is clear that brands today are no longer the only author of their brand. With the rise of cancel culture and constant UGC, companies will be consistently scrutinised and held accountable by all of their stakeholders.
I'm going to come back to Zara again, who are no stranger towards cancel culture. Take their Join Life initiative in 2022, which faced scrutiny from all forms of media for greenwashing. The company launched a limited line of clothing made from carbon-captured polyester. While commendable, this process is highly expensive and energy-intensive, that does not come anywhere near reducing their over-consumptive business model. Consumers took to the media to call out Zara for the insignificance of the campaign, since the majority of their inventory is built on unsustainable products.
Exactly, and that's exactly what I'm trying to say here, that is, if consumers can continue to hold brands accountable and call out practices which fall short of the bar, they can continue to be influencers for positive change and challenge marketers to make better, more sustainable choices, whilst also encouraging consumers to align their values with their wallets. Ultimately, combining these actions will give consumers a hugely greater power to have a positive impact on climate change by holding firm a less is more attitude to consumption. After all, isn't marketing largely based on developing insights from consumer behaviour and data?
Yes, and if we as consumers change our behaviours for the better, then marketers will have no choice but to follow if they want to appeal to their target audiences. On the other side, it has been identified through research that any commitments from businesses and governments will only be successful if they come hand in hand with behavioural change from consumers themselves.
Exactly, and that's why I think consumers hold the ultimate power to change the DSP and therefore have a very positive impact on climate change.
I think that's enough analysis, don't you think?
I'll say so.
So guys, who really has the greater power to positively impact on climate change by tackling overconsumption? Is it marketers or is it consumers?
Well, the fact is there is no singular answer to this question. It's clear through our analysis that both parties hold power to create change by tackling overconsumption.
whether it's marketers shifting towards more sustainable marketing practices and strategically influencing others to reduce consumption,
or consumers aligning their values with their actions and exploiting social learning to positively influence others.
It's very clear that the parties are interdependent on one another to make this change happen.
Therefore, to tackle the problem of overconsumption, marketers and consumers must unite to transform the DSP as we know it and create the most positive impact on climate change.
Doing so would be a huge leap in the direction of One World Living!